All right, it is Tuesday. We are live on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, and on your radio. Welcome to Drive Time with DeRussia. It's Jason. Dan is here, Mark Fry on the news, and Mark Fry will join us again around 4:35 for DeRussia Eats with a little more information on massive changes in the craft beer landscape here in the Twin Cities. Are you drinking at craft breweries as much as you used to? It's not looking great for a number of craft breweries that are shutting it down. So we'll talk about that with Mark and with you at about 4:30 today. I want to start by asking you if you have ever publicly ripped your boss or ripped your employer. Because with all the discussion over the last couple of days about Stephen Colbert and The Late Show and the entire Late Night being canceled on CBS last night, I'm watching TV and Jon Stewart just absolutely on The Daily Show destroying his bosses. Colbert, with maybe a little bit more of a soft shoe, certainly compared to his reaction to the settlement that Paramount, his bosses, reached with President Donald Trump, which, by the way, I have been pretty clear on this, that having the President of the United States suing news organizations, I am astonished at how quickly people have just accepted this as like, well, of course. You're like, what on earth? If Joe Biden or Barack Obama had done this, if George W. Bush had sued a news organization while in office, I think people would have freaked out. But Donald Trump does anything, and it's, well, it's about time they stick it to the media. So anyway, I'm watching Colbert, and my gut reaction on this is a little bit of a cringe, because while I will gently rib my bosses here on this show, I work for somebody and it's weird to stick it to the people that you work for. 651-461-9226. How do you feel about that when you watch somebody on TV or hear somebody on the radio? Do you ever wish you, maybe you have? And what kind of reaction did you get? Let's listen to a little bit of what happened last night with Stephen Colbert and with Jon Stewart.
They clarified that the cancellation was purely a financial decision, but How could it purely be a financial decision if The Late Show is number one in ratings? A lot of folks. Yeah. It's confusing. A lot of folks are asking that question, mainly my staff's parents and spouses. Well, over the weekend, somebody at CBS followed up their gracious press release with a gracious anonymous leak saying they pulled the plug on our show because of losses pegged between $40 million and $50 million a year. $40 million is a big number. I could see us losing $24 million, but where would Paramount have possibly spent the other $16 million? Oh, yeah.
Oh, what happened to that? It's pretty great. To me, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. That was hilarious. It was subtle, but not subtle. It wasn't, here is a 10-minute rant on how terrible CBS was. For that, you would be listening to The Daily Show on Comedy Central.
The fact that CBS didn't try to save their number one rated network late night franchise that's been on the air for over three decades is part of what's making everybody wonder, was this purely financial? Or maybe the path of least resistance for your $8 billion merger? choose. If you're trying to figure out why Stephen's show is ending, I don't think the answer can be found in some smoking gun email or phone call from Trump to CBS executives or in CBS's QuickBooks spreadsheets on the financial health of late night. I think the answer is in the fear and pre-compliance that is gripping all of America's institutions at this very moment. Institutions that have chosen not to fight the vengeful and vindictive actions of our pubic hair doodling commander-in-chief. This is not the moment.
A little more aggressive, right? And if you're Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, in late night TV, there is a long tradition of sticking it to your boss and sticking it to the corporate man. Because you know what? We all have a boss, and don't all of us want to stick it to the corporate man? 651-461-9226. Let's go to Wendy in Andover. Wendy, what do you think about this?
Well, I think that those comedians are going to say what they're going to say right now. But what I wanted to come and yeah, they got the platform and they can do what they want. But I think it's interesting, appalling, not shocking, whatever, how the left is claiming that Colbert is getting canceled because of his left-wing views.
Right.
When anybody that said anything wrong for the last 4 years on the right lost their jobs, got canceled, were ostracized, were let go, everything just for some statements that the left didn't agree with. And nobody had a problem with that.
Who are some of those folks that lost their position because of that?
Okay. Well, there were a lot of corporate people that did in different corporations, like the gal that was, the ESPN gal.
Yeah.
Was the head of
Sage Steele.
And the gal that was the head of Levi or one of the big jeans companies. There were the guy that was the MC on The Bachelorette and The Bachelor. Right. I mean, they tried to get rid of Joe Rogan off of Spotify, but it didn't work because the country had about had enough of it by then. They tried to get rid of the world's greatest comedian. His name escapes me, off of Netflix. You know, so but nobody had a problem with that. But the thing is that to say that Colbert was canceled because of his leftist views or because of his calling out Paramount a few days ago and then the cancellation.
I mean, the timing is certainly, in a business where you're focused on how people think about how, how they react and how they respond. Like, come on. Like, the timing is crazy. I think, obviously, late night also is a financially failing endeavor, so there's no doubt there have been
every one of them except Gutfeld.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the cost of producing Gutfeld is like nothing. So where the cost of producing these network shows is really, really high. It's really high, and the numbers don't necessarily work out. They don't necessarily work out. Let's go to Jerry in Matamidi. Jerry, what do you like it? Do you like it when these kind of hosts or comedians stick it to their company or stick it to their boss, or does it make you feel kind of like, oof, I don't know, they're risking it here?
Well, I agree with you, Jason. It's kind of the norm for the late night comedy. I mean, even when you go back to Carson.
Oh, Carson used to rip on NBC. Yeah. Yes.
And Carson, you know, whatever the. They rip kind of more, almost more on the network than the people sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I spent 45 years in one industry, recently retired. And when I originally started out as a younger man, there were a lot of family businesses. And it seemed like the bosses kind of seemed like they cared about you a little more. And now when you're answering to shareholders and corporations and, you know, genuinely, I just don't think they care about the people as much. And I was always okay with that. As long as you understand that, you know what your purpose is and what your job is.
Right.
They don't owe you. They don't owe you anything more than that. That paycheck, if you deliver the goods to them, you know, and it's easy to get mixed up in that. But it's also enjoyable to have bosses that are genuinely, hey, how's it going? How's the wife?
Right.
How's the kid?
Right.
All that stuff. But you find that less and less today, I believe.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I'm not saying like this is not like my war on bosses. But the reality is when they're doing what they're supposed to do, I guess, which is be responsible to the shareholders. But
they'll close a branch because it's more profitable than thinking about maybe the people that are losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And even as managers, I mean, I made myself up to a fairly higher level, and it seemed like, you know, if you appreciate the people that work for you, it's like you can get more mileage out of them, too. It's not that difficult.
So do you think that does this embolden you more or less to kind of speak out in the workplace or say like, oh, I don't agree with this? Or are we in just sort of a kiss up scenario where because you have these bosses that don't really care, or at least their number one priority is the shareholders. I wonder if you end up with just the circle of yes men, you know?
Yeah, and I think the, you know, generationally, I mean, I'm a product of the, you know, of the 70s when I entered the workforce. So generationally, I kept my part-time job teaching the apprentices in the trade, and it's been interesting to watch how even the employee feels about dedication and you know, hey, I'm going to quit, but I'm not going to tell anybody.
Interesting.
Know?
It is. Good call, Jerry. Thank you. I appreciate it. 651-461-9226, sort of talking about the boss vibe. Listening to Colbert, Jon Stewart. And this weekend it was the WNBA. We'll talk about that when we come back. All right, a reminder, it is Twins Ticket Tuesday, so we will be giving away a 4-pack of tickets for this Saturday. It's going to be a fun weekend in the Twin Cities because we have the Aquatennial Parade this week. You got the fireworks on Saturday. Big music festival down at Treasure Island that I'm going to this weekend, a little outdoor music festival on Saturday. So lots of stuff going on, but we're going to give away that 4-pack of tickets for July 16th against the Washington Nationals. And the first 10,000 fans get a Bailey Ober.
26th.
Oh, what'd I say?
16th.
My God.
You just transformed the two into a one.
26th, this Saturday.
I had a heart attack moment there because I've put the wrong script in front of you before. And so then I...
Bailey Ober, I know 10,000 fans get a Bailey Ober jersey.
The City Connect version, yeah.
Right, thanks to Lee County. So that's pretty good. Earlier today, I heard Jordana refer to it as Lee Country.
Well,
which is not, I mean, that, you know, it's close enough.
Close enough.
Close enough. Talking about ripping your bosses, I bring this up partially because I have always worked in a business where disagreement and telling your boss that you think they're full of is sort of normal newsroom behavior. And throughout most of my career, I've had bosses that, now they don't like it when you tell them that you're full of it, that you think they're full of it, but they know that it's part of the deal. It's part of getting to good conversation and good results. So I also acknowledge that, like, this is why I would never react to the WNBA players protesting their pay the way so many of you did. Here's what happened this weekend at the All-Star Game.
This is one of the most successful All-Star weekends we have ever seen in this league, and we know what we're talking about. We've all been covering it for nearly two decades, but something important happened before the game. As you know, the collective bargaining agreement is under discussion right now between the league and their players. And before the game, the players came out without their warm-ups on with shirts that said, pay us what you owe us. There is a feeling among the players, as they expressed in their meeting on Thursday, that they want to have a piece of the revenue. It has been record-sharing revenue for the WNBA, and they have not been sharing that with the players.
So, to me, that was sort of a, well, yeah, like, when else are you going to do that, right? When else are you going to wear that? And I look at it and say, like, yeah, good. And I posted about this on social media, and so many people responded, well, criticize your employer. You know, you get what you get. And I feel bad for you guys that you work in a scenario that you can't criticize your employer. Because, Dan, you've worked here for 25 years.
It'll be 25 in February, yeah.
Now, going on the air and saying, I want to get paid, would be a choice.
That's an option? I can actually be paid,
sure,
for this?
You had a complaint about your compensation?
What?
You can go ahead right now. I'll turn over the airwaves to Dan Cook. No?
Well, the problem is that I know that the people that would need to hear that are not,
not
listening at the moment. So,
yes. I like it when people... Now, when you criticize the boss, there is a chance, if you're not in a union, that you could face a consequence for that.
If you're not in the union, or if you're not, that's the thing about, you know, the late night folks, and, you know, you even talked about newsroom folks. When you're criticizing the boss and you're the product, it's a lot more difficult for the boss to say, oh, I don't like that person criticizing me, they're gone.
That's right.
Because that's the product the boss is trying to sell. So there is that slight difference to it.
Yeah, I think that is the main difference, right?
Yeah.
That is why Colbert and Letterman and Jon Stewart can all kind of do their thing. And that's why Nafisa Collier can wear a shirt that,
yes,
says, pay us what you owe us.
Nobody's firing Nafisa Collier. Now, if you're the, you know, last person on the bench for the Lynx, are you a little more nervous to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. And understandably so.
Dan on Facebook says, I rip my bosses to their face. Don't micromanage me. Ugel says, I called out the lead trainer during a 300-person conference call. I asked a question about a feature that was getting rolled out. She told me to look it up in the process guide. Jeez. That is pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous. I'm here to cheer for more yelling at your bosses. Chris Saliza will join us in just a minute. What is Hunter Biden doing? Chris, we'll talk about that next. Well, continuing to prove that we are in one of the craziest timelines of all time, I did not expect 3 hours of Hunter Biden talking about George Clooney, claiming that it was Ambien that made Joe Biden do such a abysmal job in the presidential debate that led to him dropping out. He did take some shots at some longtime Democratic advisors who have made a lot of money in the podcast world and consulting world. And if there's anything that Hunter Biden did that brought people together, I think it's that. Chris Saliza is with us at the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Chris, everybody liked the rip on the Pod Save America host and sort of the Obama consultant class. I mean, that brought the far left and the Trump crowd together. It was beautiful.
I feel like it's that and cursing were the two. He really put on a master cursing class in that three-hour interview. And look, I've been a reporter for a long time. I mean, I've seen some real craftsmen when it comes to cursing. And my gosh, there was a lot of F-bombs. But yes, I mean...
We were going to pull a clip. I think Dan maybe did. Dan did pull a clip. This is what you have to do to play a clip of some of what Hunter Biden said.
I don't have to be nice. Number one, I agree with Quentin Tarantino. George Clooney is not a actor. He is a I don't know what he is. You. What do you have to do with anything? Why do I have to listen to you? What right do you have to step on a man who's given 52 years of his life to the service of this country and decide that you, George Clooney...
It's a lot of bleeps. Dan spent 45 minutes editing that to put all those bleeps in there. That is amazing.
Oh, my God. I mean, in one way, it must have felt terrific
to absolutely
blow everyone up, you know? Like, there's a lot of times I've wanted in my career to be like, who are you?
Right.
But I've resisted doing that. And, man, it must look good. But, like, someone was asking me about this interview, and I said, yeah, it's obviously terrible, but, like, any time, if anyone says to you, whether you're a public figure or not, hey, man, you want to sit down for a three-hour videotaped interview?
let's go.
We say no. Yeah, like, nothing good will come out of that. I mean, also, they were outside. I mean, it's hot as hell here in D.C. I can't imagine sitting outside for 3 hours. But and Hunter Biden had the, like, Steve Bannon homage outfit on, like the long sleeve T-shirt over the long under the long sleeve shirt. Crazy. These are the things I focus on.
Right. This was Channel 5 is the name of this YouTube channel. And I don't know. I think everybody wants to hear what Hunter Biden has to say to a certain degree, but also no one cares. You know what I mean? It's sort of that weird. Am I curious to hear his perspective? Absolutely. What do we do with this? I don't know.
I know it's hard because I do feel, and I think this is actually, joking aside, somewhat difficult because we know this is a guy who has struggled for most of his adult life with substance abuse issues. It's kind of felt to me, I did not watch all 3 hours. I mean, I got a lot of time on my hands, but not that much time. But I did watch like 40-ish minutes. I kind of had it on in the background, and then when he got particularly lathered up, I turned it up more. But it was kind of, it felt to me like going slow by the car crash on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it didn't, at the end of it, I wasn't like, oh, I was kind of like, oh, you know, like it just, it had that feel to it. He's clearly not in great mental headspace.
Right.
You know, I mean, agreeing to do that and then doing it in the way that he did it. You know, I assume in his mind he thinks he's defending his dad. I mean, I would argue, you know, stuff like that actually hurts Biden's legacy as opposed to helps it marginally. And he clearly isn't helping the Democratic Party. I mean, the last thing they want to talk about amid day 15 of the Jeffrey Epstein memo scandal is what Hunter Biden said about the Pod Save America guys or George Clooney or, you know, I mean, anyone else that he took their head off of.
Right. Chris Eliza is with us. The only thing for me that I think is maybe worthy of a little bit of analysis is sort of the copium that is being ingested for this debate performance and for what I think so much reporting has made it very clear in the aftermath, and people can be mad at the media for not being more aggressive in the moment, but they also could acknowledge reality, and a lot of sources come out of the woodworks once somebody's already gone down. So the pile on is ready, but it's pretty clear that Joe Biden, this was not just Ambien from a flight took like a week before the debate. Come
on. I went through the timeline because I kind of remembered. I had a vague sense of that because if you remember back right after the debate happened, there was, I don't remember them all, but we are at least at 10 excuses now for what, like it was, he had a cold. The moderators were unfair. He was tired. The makeup people didn't do a good job. Yeah, I mean, there were so many, and this to me just fits into that. Like, look, I went back and looked at the timeline. He was back in Delaware on June 18th. The debate was June 27th. That's 9 days. Now, he's 80-plus years old. I mean, he was sick. I mean, he had been to Europe earlier in the month. He had been to Italy. He flew from Italy straight to L.A. to a fundraiser with George Clooney and Barack Obama. He then flew back east to a fundraiser right near where I live in Virginia with Hillary and Bill Clinton, and then he went to Rehoboth. So, yes, I get a couple days of rest and recovery there, but this idea that, like, he was given Ambien on those trips and therefore 8 to 9 days later was unable to perform at 9 p.m. Eastern time in a debate, that just doesn't fly. It's like you said, if we had no other reporting, I think I'd still be like, that doesn't make any sense. I've taken Ambien before when I can't sleep. And, yeah, I felt a little groggy the next morning, but I was fine by noon. But we have all this other reporting that has all these other episodes of people saying, oh, I was in a meeting with him 3 months before and he didn't right. recognize me. He seemed out. You know, I mean, context matters.
Chris Saliza is with us. You can read him on Substack. He's on YouTube as well. I want to ask about sort of the president's approach over the last couple of days, where it appears that he has just a giant bag full of nonsense, and he just starts flinging it when it's time.
I'll admit, I didn't think you were going to go with nonsense, but yes.
There's a bag of... He's got a... It's a very full bag. You can fill in
it's
the...
It's a bag of spaghetti that he's throwing at a wall.
It's unbelievable.
Exactly.
I mean, it started with like the Redskins and the Indians need to change their name.
Goes back even to Rosie O'Donnell and her citizenship.
Rosie O'Donnell. I almost forgot about Rosie. It feels like a year ago.
Don't forget about the very convenient leak of the fact that the FBI was investigating James Comey and John Brennan, the former FBI director. Yeah. I mean, if you need red meat to distract a base, you would think that would do it. I mean, all of these things. I'm writing about this tonight in the newsletter for Substack, but like, why are we talking about Barack Obama again? So, you know, Trump was doing this big thing with the Prime Minister of the Philippines today, and he just goes off on like a 10-minute rant about how Barack Obama is really to blame for all this. He started the hoax with Russia. I'm like, dude, we're literally talking about like a decade, more than a decade ago. And by the way, none of that stuff he's saying is true. But yes, he is absolutely. He's going to all the old reliables like Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, you know, Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, this is like the Eagles playing their greatest hits at the concert to try to, you know, get the base. I was going to say people, but it's really the MAGA base to get them focused on something other than. Why did they say there was a client list and now there isn't one? What are they not telling us? You know, and it's still not working.
He called for a former President Obama to face criminal charges for treason. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he tweeted he truth-socialed a video, an AI video of him sitting in the Oval Office while Barack Obama was wrestled to the floor and arrested. I mean, like what?
Yeah.
It just, I mean, it just, it really does feel to me like, you know, the crowd at the Billy Joel concert is kind of restive and he's like, all right, I got to bring out Piano Man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Is it working?
I gotta go to the old reliable.
Is it working for him?
I don't think so. And you know what? It's interesting because if we had talked yesterday at this time, I might have been like, maybe it's turning a corner because it's more about the fake news. And I'm putting, you can't see this on the radio, but I'm doing air quotes on fake news. You know, it's more about that, and they're all out to get him. But now, like, just in the last 24 hours, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is, like, you know, I always say the platonic ideal of a Trump supporter, coming out and saying, we need more, I'm not satisfied. You have the Republican-controlled House Oversight Committee saying they're going to subpoena Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, is she going to show up and talk? No, I don't think so. But that just provides more fodder for the story to continue lurching forward. And Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, it's like, oh, okay, well, we're canceling votes for Thursday and we're going on recess because he doesn't want to deal with it. You know, I mean, this is very much, this is an old basketball reference, but if you're old enough, you remember the time before the shot clock in college basketball. And North Carolina did this best under Dean Smith. They would run a four corners offense. They put guys in all four corners of the half court and just pass the ball around and stall, you know, until if they were ahead, until the game ended and the clock ran out. That's what House Republicans especially are trying to do. Like, well, we're going to disappear for 5.5 weeks and we're going to hope that this all goes away when we come back, because they don't have a good answer for any of this. And a lot of the base voters are angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did release those Martin Luther King assassination documents. So,
I mean, yet another. Hey, look over here.
Well, here's some files. Maybe people won't remember that they're not releasing the files we're asking for. Chris Saliza. You can follow him on Substack. We love having you on. Thanks for spending some time with us, Chris.
Always, my friend. Have a good day.
Chris Saliza with us here on CCO. Drive Time back in just a minute. Started a new show yesterday. It's always a dramatic scenario, isn't it? Because you feel like if you're going to watch a new show, you got to get invested. So we just finished Friends and Neighbors, Your Friends and Neighbors. Well, we finished the first season. That's the John Hamm Apple TV show where John Hamm is a rich guy who loses his job and turns to a life of stealing stuff from other rich people. Sort of like Robin Hood, except not really. Stealing for the rich to give to himself. And it was, first season, pretty good. Not great, pretty good. So, inspired by our segment on the Emmy nominations, I started watching The Studio. Don't you kind of miss the days when we all could just like turn on ABC and we were just watching that? And instead, like, I'm watching a show that you finished up 6 months ago. I don't know. The Studio is described as a satirical cringe comedy television series. It's a Seth Rogen thing. Two episodes in, pretty good. Alyssa and I we watch two episodes, usually from 9 to 10, and then it's time for bed. Then I get my warm glass of milk, like the old man I am. I finish my programs, take out my teeth, put my toupee on the nightstand, and off we go. If you have any better shows, text me, 651-461-9226. New shows. We're back in a minute after news.